Hi, everybody. Oops. Hi, everybody. Alan Arnett here with another podcast on the blog on alanarnett.com. It is Thursday, May 11th, 2023, and this upcoming weekend is going to be busy on Everest. You know, over the past few weeks, high winds above Camp 3 have been just really stopped all the activity on the mountain. The rope fixers had hoped to get the ropes all the way up to the summit maybe 2 weeks ago, but that didn't happen because of the high winds and also the tragic death of the three Sherpas that were part of that overall team. Just devastated the morale and understandably caused a delay as people were mourning their loss. But overall, the other teams have all been continuing to acclimatize. Most of the teams, in fact, almost everybody now is acclimatized, meaning that they've gone up to Camp 3, typically tagged it. And almost no one sleeps at Camp 3 anymore because they use higher levels of supplemental oxygen starting lower like at Camp 2. But about everybody has acclimatized. A lot of people went back to Kathmandu to rest up at the Yak and Yeti or other 4 and 5 star hotels, which I have never understood, but that's the way it is these days. So who am I to say that you should stay at camp, base camp and suffer, you know, after all, anyway, I digress. So everybody's ready to go. And really the gating factor is two things. One is getting the ropes to the summit. And I understand the rope team is up there right now on May, I guess it's May 12th as we're moving into Friday in Nepal. And they hope to have the ropes to the summit by the either probably the 12th or the 13th. And that'll open up the floodgates. Now, it won't surprise me if there are some fast followers, people that are right behind the rope team. That typically happens. It won't surprise me at all if Kenton Cool with his client gets up there. One of the very first people. Kenton, of course, has the non-Sherpa record for the most number of summits on Everest, around, I think he's 16. I could be wrong on that, 16 or 17. And then everybody else will follow. You know, this also becomes a time of risk tolerance. We saw on Manaslu last year that a lot of the Western guides, they left because of the avalanche danger on Manaslu, whereas the Nepali team stayed. And so that's an indication of the level of risk that teams are willing to take. Right now, with all the heavy snow that's been on Everest, the high winds, the upper mountain conditions are really unknown. So it'll be interesting to see what the rope team, those early summiters, what they report. Normally on Everest, avalanche danger is not a big factor because of those high winds and pretty steep angles. A typical avalanche terrain is around 37 degrees, and most of the slopes on Everest are either under that or over that, meaning that the avalanche doesn't, the snow does not build up in such a way that it's going to let loose and come down the mountain, or that it's too steep that it just, you know, just falls off. So we'll see how it shakes out. Avalanches are not unheard of, but certainly can happen. The other element of this, which is good news actually, is that by having a lot of snow and to some degree the wind, but not that much, it reduces the rock fall danger. And that's a real problem, especially going up between the South Col and the Balcony. Quite a bit of rock fall can happen there. That's the reason that these days everyone climbs with a really high quality climbing helmet to protect themselves. You know, similar to K2, say K2 is just crazy notorious for rock fall and people just getting seriously injured and in some cases killed by that rock fall. It does happen on Everest, not that often. And this heavy snow, it will kind of bond those rocks in place. So we'll see how it goes. You know, we talked about the numbers this year. There were 467 permits that were issued. You know, in a normal year, you'll see an attrition of about 25%. So if that happens this year, then we'll see around 350 people. And that's actually pretty manageable on a mountain like Everest, because it's a big, big mountain, big rock. Also that how many summit days, I've talked about this ad nauseum. In 2019, we saw 3 summit days. That was the root cause behind those long lines that we saw in that picture that went viral. This year, it looks like, according to people like Chris Tomer and Michael Fagan and Mark DeKeesher, that people who do this professional weather forecasting, that right now the winds have begun to relent, and it's supposed to stay that that way through the 20th. If that's true, we've got 9 days of suitable weather to summit. By suitable, I mean the winds are under 30 miles an hour on the summit. It only has to be there for, you know, literally for like 24 hours, but you can climb in those high winds up to a certain point. You can get up to the South Col if it's gusting to 40 miles an hour. It's going to be uncomfortable. You're going to suffer, but hey, in my opinion, that's what mountain climbing is all about, right? Stinking, suffering, and summiting. But anyway, hopefully the winds will stay calm for this 10-day period, and everybody will be able to spread out, and you'll be able to get up to the top. Okay, so that's kind of where we are. We're going to be watching that closely here over the next several days. I'll be reporting often, and hopefully everybody will get up and down safely, and they'll all have a positive experience regardless of whether they summit or not. For me, mountaineering is all about having the experience, and if you get to summit, it's a bonus. Okay, let me do something I've been doing, which has been very popular, and that's doing a kind of a first-person narrative on climbing the mountain. And this time, last podcast, I did one about going through the icefall. This time, I want to talk about going up the Lhotse Face. You know, obviously, we've done the icefall, we've done the Western Coombe, and now we're going to do the Lhotse Face. So the Lhotse Face, as everybody knows, is the front side of Lhotse Peak, which is the fourth highest mountain in the world, sitting right next to Mount Everest, and over on the other side is Nuptse. And that's where Camp 3 is located, about 23,500 feet. So that's the route that if you're going to climb from Nepal, that 99% of the people take. Other people can take the West Ridge, but almost no one does it right now these days because it's just so difficult. But hopefully we'll actually see someone climb it coming up this winter, and we'll watch for that, see if Yost can make it this time on his third attempt. So you're at Camp 2. And you got there and you rested up a couple of days. And now your mission, which the guide announces that night at dinner, comes into the tent. Everybody's sitting around the table. You're eating probably some spaghetti, some high carb, something like that, that the Sherpa cook has made for you. And again, you just marvel at how great the food is at 21,000 feet at Camp 2. You're sitting around the table with all of your other teammates. You know, everybody's a little nervous because they know going up to Camp 3, even to tag it or spend the night, which is preferable, is really going to be difficult. You never have, and some people have never climbed to 7,000 meters before, and that's a whole new category of climbing. I always say that the altitude is exponential. So in other words, that going from, let's say, 16,000, 18,000 is one thing, 20 to 22,000 is something completely different. 26 to 28, whole new game. And just because you did good going from 18 to 20 does not guarantee that you're going to do well and perform well at those higher altitudes. So this is really a test. I always call getting to Camp 3 your ticket to the top. If you can't make Camp 3, even to tag it and come back down, you're probably not acclimatized enough or well-prepared enough to go to the summit. So you're sitting in the tent and you know all of this because you've researched it. You're prepared. You're prepared. What I always call, you're in Everest shape. And that doesn't mean physically in shape. Everest shape means that you are physically ready, that you are, your expectations are set. You have the mental toughness. You've got the knowledge and you have the why to go up and climb that mountain. So you've ticked off all those boxes, but you still haven't done it. Comes in, the guide comes in. Okay, everybody, tomorrow we're going to get up. Everybody crampons on, in, ready to go, leaving camp at 3 a.m. You look around, but this is new. This is not new to you. You've been getting up at 3 a.m. for these alpine starts all season long, leaving from base camp to go up through the icefall while it's good and frozen. But the Lhotse Face, here we go. So sure enough, 2 a.m. comes along. You get out of your sleeping bag. You pull on your clothes. Once again, everything takes much, much longer than you ever thought it would. Getting on your boots, you pull on those 8,000 meter boots. And you know, when you pull on those boots and you get the zipper pulled up, you kind of smile to yourself and you think to yourself, I'm climbing Mount Everest. So you get out of the tent, walk over to the dining tent, have that good old breakfast, probably just a piece of toast and some coffee. You're really not hungry, but you know that you got to get some calories into you. You try to drink half a liter of water and you just chug that water, kind of choking on it because, yeah, you're just not awake really. But also you're anxious. Your throat is just tight as it can be. Pretty soon you all line up. You go over with Mingma, your Sherpa, and so it's you and Mingma along with the rest of your teammates. So now you leave camp to go climb the Lhotse face. As you leave, your headlamps are lighting up the little white fixed line that leads it to the base of the face. And, you know, when you first looked at it, it looked flat. But all of a sudden, it seems like it's much steeper. Similar to the Western Coombe, it looks flat, but in reality, that 5, 10, 15 degree angle, it takes its toll. So you start moving, and you got to be careful not to be a rabbit. Don't start off fast. You got to be a turtle. You got to go slow. And so you're going slow. You get into that pace. Pretty soon, you've gone by half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour, hour and a half. You're thinking, oh, my gosh, this shouldn't take that long, but it does. And so you're moving and you're gaining elevation all along. Your breathing picks up. You kind of calm down, slow down a little bit. Finally, you reach the base of the Lhotse face. You look up. The moon is up. It's a full moon tonight, which is great. So, but you still have your headlamp on. Now it's 5 a.m. When's that sun going to come up? Well, it's not going to come up for a long time because the entire mountain of Lhotse is going to block it. Well, you look up at the Lhotse face, and the first thing you see, though, is right in front of you. It's this big bergschrund. This is where the glacier comes down from the face, and then it kind of leaves a big gap as it begins to create the Western Coombe as the Lhotse, or as the Khumbu Icefall moves on down. So you look at that big old bergschrund, and thankfully, you look off to your right, and there's a ladder going across. So you go over, and crossing a ladder now is old school to you. You don't even worry about it. You walk up to it. You take your safety carabiners. You clip one on the right, one on the left. You move across. You do it really quickly. You get across a single ladder very quickly. Mingma turns around, looks at you, gives you a little smile of approval. That makes you feel good. So now you're on the face proper. And sure enough, there's a boot path on the face. In fact, not only is there a boot path, but there's like steps. You go, well, where in the world did this come from? Well, it came from all the Sherpas that have been working so hard to stock Camp 3 and Camp 4 with tents and food and fuel, stoves, and most importantly, is that supplemental oxygen that you'll start using once you leave Camp 3. So now you're on the fixed rope. And the first part of the Lhotse face is incredibly steep. It's like 45 degrees. It's like a staircase in your house. But when you looked at the Lhotse face, you didn't realize how steep it started at the very beginning. Well, you try to get into the rhythm and you find that some of these steps, you know, that you thought was going to make it easy are too far apart. So now you have to make your own steps. You're kicking in your crampon points. You want to make sure you get good purchase. In other words, every one of your crampon points are right there solid into the mountainside. You go up one at a time. You're taking short, simple steps. Short, simple steps. Step by step, you're getting into a rhythm. You're going higher. Going higher. You're going slow, but you're going higher and you're moving. You're all of a sudden you find yourself in this line of people. You kind of lean over to your left, you look ahead, and there's 15 people ahead of you. You stop for a moment, you glance over to your right, there's about 20 people behind you. So you're one of this mass of humanity, around 50 people all moving up like a centipede, moving up the Lhotse face, and you're going short, simple steps. Short, simple steps, one by one. Don't get breathing too hard. Don't hyperventilate. Maintain control. Maintain focus. Your entire essence is now in the moment. You're not worried about the summit. You're not worried about what's happening back at base camp. You're not thinking about your family. You're not thinking about anything except being in the moment in short, simple steps. And you're making your way up higher and higher. Well, another hour goes by, and then it kind of flattens out just a smidge. By flatten, I mean it goes from 45 degrees now to maybe to 20 degrees. Oh, you stop. You're going to take a break. You take off your pack. You keep your pack clipped into you, because if that thing slides, it's gone. It's going to slide right into that bergschrund at the bottom, and you're never going to get that pack out of there. So you clip it on with a carabiner. You pull out your Nalgene bottle. You've got some electrolyte replacement in there, because even though it's cold, you're going to be sweating and you're losing calcium, you're losing sodium and potassium. And so you've got to replace that with those electrolyte tablets. You pull out a honey stinger bar. you chew on that for a little bit. Okay. You got a couple hundred calories in you. You got another half a liter of water in you. You're good to go. Put that pack back on, zip up that down coat that you're wearing. No need for the down suit quite yet. You'll use that when you go on your summit push. And now you're going to move. You're going to go up higher. Short, simple steps. Short, simple steps. And you go for another hour. All of a sudden, you see this little yellow thing up ahead. It's a tent. It's a tent. You've reached it. Camp 3. Oh my gosh, it's within sight. All of a sudden you have this surge of adrenaline and you know you can do it. You've already been going now for 5 hours. You're approaching 6 hours, but you're about to hit camp 3. And all of a sudden you get closer. It's like a magnifying glass that these tents just get bigger and bigger as you're going higher and higher. And then all of a sudden you reach it and you go, all right, I made it to camp 3. There's some people over there already in their tents. They look at you. They give you a big old thumbs up. You kind of stand up a little straighter. You're feeling good. You're going, I made it. I can do it. I got my ticket to the top. I made it to camp 3. I climbed the Lhotse face. Well, by this time, about everybody has arrived together, and you look over and you ask your guide, is this our camp? He goes, oh, no. Our camp is the high camp at camp 3. Well, where's that? Oh, it's another hour. Welcome to the Lhotse face. Climb on. This is Alan. And remember, memories are everything.